Fred Film Radio interview.
Angelo Cerbi, Fred Film Radio from the National Film Museum of Torino. And we're here with Randy Heberkamp, the Managing Director of Preservation and Foundation Programs of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Science of America. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Listen, Randy, before dwelling into the reason why you're here, why don't you tell us a little bit about your job?
Okay. I oversee the Academy's library, archive, all of our educational programs, and our internship program, things like that. The things that the Oscars, which is what everybody knows us for, pay for, we use that money for educational outreach, public programs, and training America's next generation, or actually the world's generation, next generation filmmakers. You know, our screenwriting competition and our Student Academy Awards are open internationally as well.
And you also collaborate with national museums like ours for this exhibit about animals in films, which was kind of unusual but very interesting. And you were here because yesterday night there was like a one-of-a-kind screening of a silent movie for people and dogs.
Yes, it was really the first time. I've had dogs on the stage, but I've never had dogs in the audience. So that was quite a unique experience. We ran a Rin Tin Tin film, so hopefully there was something they might be interested in. I don't know if it was just timing or whether it got set off, but there was a lot of barking during the fight scene with Rin Tin Tin and the villain. So it was kind of interesting. I don't know if they were egging him on or just happened to get anxious at that point. But it was very amusing to hear all the barking going on then.
And how did they behave besides the barking part?
They were great. And most of them were sitting in their seats. Some of them were laying on the floor and took a nap. And some of them seemed to be watching the screen. I don't know what they were getting from it. But the best part of it was the people were there with their dogs, enjoying the time with their dogs, and just, you know, dogs really appreciate closeness to their humans. And so it was sharing that I think was the most fun.
This exhibit at the National Museum of Film of Torino is covering all the animals that were actors throughout the life of movies, basically. Mm-hmm. You are a more specific expert on dogs. Yes. How could you say that we can define a dog an actor or not? Where's the trick?
Well, I think dogs were kind of the original method actor in the sense that they just are. You know, they're spontaneous. Whenever you see a dog on screen, you know, they're just being themselves, and they're just now, granted, when dogs perform in movies and are asked to do certain tricks, that's a specific thing. But a lot of what I think makes dogs' performances work is a director who's really patient and allows the dog to be themselves. They're cast because of their personality. Each dog has their own personality. And so you capture these little moments where the dogs are just doing things that are just so unique and so specific that it's the reason we love them. You know, I just was watching dogs walk down the street just now, and each dog has its own walk. Each dog has its own personality, and it's really fun to see that. They don't know how to be fake.
Do you think that a dog can follow the personality of its owner, or it's the opposite? I remember, you know, if you don't remember the beginning of the Walt Disney film about the 101 Dalmatians, where the guy's watching people walking the dog in the park. Every single dog looks exactly like his master.
Yeah, I think that it's very interesting to me, and it's probably the most humbling experience I ever had when I had a dog just recently, about 10 years ago, and the dog chose me. You know, the dog somehow decided that I was the person that needed to be, that he was concerned about, that he wanted to know where I was, that he wanted to walk him. I didn't say that. I didn't say, oh, by the way, I own you now. You know, it was, he said, no, you are responsible for me. I'm responsible for you. We are a team. He made that decision. So I think it's the same way with dogs. I think we start to adapt ourselves to them, and they certainly adapt to us to some degree, because they pay very close attention to what we do, and they want to please us, but at the same time, they also know what they want. They know when they want to eat, they know when they want to walk, and they make it pretty clear.
In your presentation of yesterday night, you were telling about a kind of a time divide for dog actors when the silent movies were over. When the sound came up, it seemed that dog could not be actor anymore. But then...
Well, that's what they told Rin Tin Tin's owner, that Rin, they didn't sign a contract for him because they thought sound, you know, what does that mean? Well, you know, dogs don't talk. But I think quite the opposite happened. You actually had the sense of more sense of reality with the sound and the barking and the sound effects and the people, so that the dogs were more an intrinsic part of a real situation. And I think also that in the Depression era of the 30s, when sound came in, people were looking for escapism, and they were looking for things like dog heroes and animal heroes and westerns, and horses were very popular as well. And I think that that's a very important part of growing up, is having these kinds of good feelings about animals and the connection that we have with them. Obviously, there are ways that dogs can be mistreated or exploited in movies or treated badly. And frankly, I think people respond more negatively to that than they do just about any other kind of violence when it's against animals.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing, because I think it's important for us to remember that we're here on this earth together, that there's more to life than just humans, and that we have a planet and the creatures on it that we're responsible for. And I think movies help us do that.
And probably the fact that dogs are more common pet animal than horses, for example, brings the people closer to this,
yes,
to this fact too.
And, you know, a lot of people say, well, why don't you talk about cats? And I love cats. I have nothing. I'm not a prejudice against cats, but I think dogs do have dogs do reach out to us. They're pack animals. They really, crave human connections, and they're very outgoing and always happy when we come home, wagging their tails and ready to greet us. Cats are kind of like, well, I'm ready to eat now, you know, so meow meow. But you know, they can be very warm and affectionate as well. But when it comes to making a movie and telling a story, a dog's personality just fits that much better, especially when you're dealing with real animals and trying to tell a story with reality, as opposed to an animated version, which you can do whatever you want with.
Exactly.
That.
And they do what you want.
Exactly.
When you want.
Exactly.
And following your speech yesterday, I just found out a huge number of dogs that were famous in the movies that I didn't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, because maybe, I mean... especially in the silent movies era. But which is your favorite one of the, like, modern days, let's say?
Modern days? Well, I think Rin Tin Tin in the silent era actually molded what we expect from. But he was one of the few to first of all, have his name above the title. He was one of the few where one dog really was Rin Tin Tin, and he really did kind of do all of his movies and a lot of his own stunts. He did have some stunt doubles because he was a valuable dog, but at the same time, it was usually him that you saw, and he was very specifically featured, so you knew it was him. And not many other dogs maintain that longevity. He had about almost a 10-year career, which for a dog is a lifetime.
It's a real lifetime. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it was quite amazing that he was able to do that. I think his connection as a rescue dog from World War I was also part of his mythology. And I think that some of the other dogs that came along were used more for comedy. And I think he could do comedy, but he also could do drama. I know that sounds a little bit odd, but he was a very responsive dog. And in fact, one of the big surprises of the screening that we had of this silent film for the audience was how really enjoyable it was and how good he was in it. Because they're really, I mean, he wears a disguise. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's amusing and it's entertaining. And the film is constructed in a really enjoyable way. And yet, when you see his reactions and when you see the way they're cut in to the film, it's very ingeniously done. And, you know, whether or not the dog knew what he was doing, exactly isn't the point. I think, as much as they were able to get him to do a number of things and be very spontaneous, and they figured out ways to use him in many different emotional situations and to be totally convincing.
Yeah, absolutely. Many of them were treated like real stars. You know, when they died, it was like news on the papers, news on TVs and stuff. So they reached the status of actor, mm-hmm. but they never reached the status of Oscar actor.
Right.
Which is right. something that it's, on one side it's obvious and it's logical, but sometimes maybe not. For example, the dog of the artist was one of the lead actors of the mm-hmm. film, basically.
Well, is there any chance?
I don't know. I mean, it's one of those great early stories of the Oscars is that Daryl Zanuck wrote in for Best Actor. His choice that he voted for the first year was for Rin Tin Tin, and he had written scripts for Rin Tin Tin. So I think it was partly his way of saying, I don't take this very seriously. And also part of it, of him supporting, you know, something that was about his career. They rejected that ballot. They knew who voted for what at that point and said, you know, you need to take this more seriously. And the truth of the matter is that when it comes to even child actors, I mean, there was a lot of dissension. They used to have a tiny little miniature Oscar for the juvenile Oscar because they felt that a child's performance was in a different category than an adult's. And even now, they treat voiceover actors for animation as if they aren't eligible for Oscars, even though they are. But no one's ever been voted mm-hmm. for just a voiceover performance, even if they're doing voiceover for a dog in a movie. So I think there's just prejudices about performances like that. I think that, you know, the Academy takes the position that that's, you know, something that is different than acting. And I think that there are other organizations that have given awards for dog performances and for popularity. And I think that's fantastic because, again, the thing that I think that all of these movies do, which I think is very important, and which is why I think even just discussing the idea of a dog and an award is interesting, is I think it does make us feel closer to them. I think it also makes us appreciate them. And I think it's a really great way to hopefully end some of the bad treatment that animals get and the lack of care that animals get. I think if you don't if you don't raise children to have a respect for animals and not also perhaps a little bit of fear, because even
fear helps.
Yes, even dogs can do bad things and you need to be prepared. They need to understand where you're coming from and vice versa. But I think it's so important. And I think that considering the way we treat animals in the movies is the same thing as the way we treat women or minorities. We need to be very careful about the stories we tell, the way we use animals, whether stereotypically or physically in the movies. And so I think all of this has been a great discussion. And I really applaud the museum for having this exhibition because I think it's very important. In the same way that film noir was thought of as being just cheap detective movies and mm-hmm. animation was thought of as being cartoons, I think having an exhibition like this really brings to light that these elements of filmmaking are important and that in some ways animal films are almost a genre of their own.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that there is a sense of what does this say about us and what does this say about animals?
Well, thank you very much, Randy. Thanks to Randy Heber, Camp, the Managing Director of Preservation and Foundation Programs of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Science. Again, a mouthful of it.
Oscar people.
Yeah, the Oscar people. To cut it short, thank you very much for being with us. I'm Angelo Cerbi for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.